You may be seated. Well, this gospel today is kind of a faith shaker. Really, it is. I look to St. Luke's gospel, chapter 21, verse 18, where Jesus says, "But not a hair of your head shall be lost." Well, yeah, let's just leave that one aside for right now. Anyway, yeah, so actually we're rounding up the church year. We are heading in towards Advent, which means Christmas is terribly, terribly close on us. But we are heading on towards Advent, and it used to be that Advent had a twofold purpose. Advent brought in, yes, the first coming of Christ, where we talked about Jesus being born in the manger and the Virgin Mary and St. Joseph and John the Baptist. But as we were talking about the first Advent of Christ, we also were to talk about the second Advent of Christ. When we talked about the first coming of Christ, we also talked about the second coming of Christ. And Advent was also longer than 4 weeks. It was more like 7 weeks. And our lectionary today still reflects that old, longer Advent with a flavor of the second coming of Christ. And our readings today talk about that second coming. We have this reading from Malachi, where we talk about, oh, when that great and terrible day comes, there's going to be this and it's going to be that, and there's going to be all these, you know, horrible things that are going to happen. And we talk about our reading from 2 Thessalonians, Paul saying, look, there's going to be this and it's going to be that, and some of you are so worried about the second coming that you've stopped working. You're like, hey, the end is near. Nothing we can do about it. Put your sandwich boards down. Put your bells down. Just kick your feet up, wait for the end, just pray. And Paul gives a corrective on that. Basically, 2 Thessalonians is saying, look, okay, yes, the end is near, but that doesn't mean you get to just kick your feet up and wait for the end. There are some things that we have to do in the meanwhile. When we get to our gospel passage, Jesus is talking about the end. He's saying, look, there's going to be things coming. There's all sorts of things there's going to be wars and rumors of wars and people saying, I'm the Messiah, come follow me. Don't pay any attention to them. This is what you need to do. Oh, by the way, people are going to turn you over to rulers and they're going to persecute you and they're going to hate you. Well, they hated me. Why wouldn't they hate you? And he says all this stuff. And I have to tell you a secret. I hate eschatology. Eschatology is the study of the end things. It goes right along with apocalypticism and most of the stuff that's in the book of Revelation. And I hate that kind of stuff. It's a little known secret. Okay? I can't stand it. Well, yeah, well, now it's not a little known secret. It's recorded online and going to be put on the web and it'll be there and everyone will know it. And yeah. Oh, anyway. Well, see, every year, Bishop Simpson asks me to produce a continuing education seminar for the clergy at the annual Clericus that happens right after our All Saints Festival. And so the first year it was this thing on baptism, and this last year he said, Father Looker, give me 4 ideas. And I sat there and I came up with 3 ideas that I thought were really good. And I was fumbling around and trying to come up with this 4th idea, and I said, you know what? There's all this confusion about Revelation and what it means. I hate to do this, but let me just throw out this idea about different ideas of how people interpret Revelation. And I just kind of threw it down at the end as like an afterthought. This wasn't even an email. This was a text message I sent to him. Okay? Yeah, guess which one he picked. Yeah, so anyway, so I read this passage when I was preparing for the sermon and was like, maybe I could take a vacation. No. No, everybody else was taking a vacation this week. So, but as I read through this passage, there was a line that jumped out at me. And the version that we read from the gospel book really didn't do it justice. I'm looking at the very last verse. Yeah, there's good stuff there, and there's powerful stuff about you being handed over and resolve it not to prepare what you're going to say beforehand, because the Holy Spirit's going to tell you what to say, and I'll put words in your mouth. It's gospel. It's what Jesus said. Of course it's good stuff. But the one that really, really, and I read this, and I said, that's going to be the sermon. By your patience, possess your souls. By your patience, possess your souls. That's St. Luke 21:19. My wife and I have a phrase, never pray for patience. Okay? Don't do it. How many of you saw the movie Evan Almighty? Okay? A couple of you saw it. Okay? It was a sequel to Bruce Almighty. Not nearly as family friendly. Okay? Evan Almighty was a much more family friendly movie. God shows up and tells Evan Baxter that he is going to be a modern day Noah and he needs to build an ark. Okay? Much more family-friendly movie, much more Christian movie. He needs to build an ark. And he gets all sorts of very comical incidents that go along with this, but he's got to build this ark. And in doing so, he has all these troublesome events that come up. But there's this incident in a diner where his wife is having this a moment of real conflict where she doesn't know if she should leave this crazy lunatic that she's with or not, because he's stopped shaving, he started wearing a robe, he's building this ark, and he's started collecting a very small zoo, quit his job, all sorts of crazy stuff. And this this waiter, who's actually God, comes up to her and starts having this conversation with her and says, honey, when you started this job, what did you ask for? And she said, I wanted more opportunity to spend time together as a family. Okay. Now, when you ask for things like that, do you suppose that God just drops those in your laps? Or do you suppose that he gives you more opportunity to spend time together as a family? So, by extension, if you're praying for patience, do you suppose God is just going to drop an abundance of patience on you, or is he going to give you an abundance of opportunities to be patient? So is he just going to magically grace you with patience, or is he going to give you a lot of opportunities where things just don't come to you immediately? So, never pray for patience is the expression in my family, because that means that things will not come to you immediately. Okay? But patience. By your patience, you will possess your souls. What is patience? In one sense, the English translation just doesn't do it justice. A more archaic translation, a more classical translation, something more along the lines of the King James, might render it something along the lines of, by your long suffering. Okay, if we look at the fruits of the Spirit, you know, the fruit of the Spirit there is long-suffering. It's not patience, it's long-suffering. Okay, which, you know, if you're patiently waiting for something, depending on how important it may be, you might be long-suffering. Depends on if you order at UPS or U.S. Postal Service. In fact, patient, if you go and you look up the root of it, it has the same root as a patient in a hospital, one who suffers. It has the same Latin root as passion, as the passion of the Christ. So you could conceivably render it by your passion, you will possess your souls. So what are you passionate about? Are you passionate about the gospel? Are you passionate about Jesus Christ? Here's one thing that I'm passionate about. Okay, it's a geek moment, all right? You're going to think this is crazy, and it will surprise you. I am passionate about Shakespeare. I know, you were thinking something sci-fi, I know. No, those are hobbies. Those are fun things. I am passionate about Shakespeare. I actually once almost got thrown out of a teacher's convention because I went to a seminar and this guy, this talking head who was putting on this little seminar, this little breakout session, was talking about inclusiveness and had the audacity to say that Shakespeare shouldn't be included in student curriculums in high school because he didn't have anything to say to modern high school students. Yeah, see, and I went off. No. Yeah, I did. Father Lon, who's been in some meetings where I've went off, knows that this is not a pretty thing. And I just barely checked it down enough to keep myself from getting thrown out of the convention. But I'm passionate about this. I was in a class this week. My seniors had just finished watching Macbeth. And we were wrapping up 4 days of watching this movie. And it was a great version of Macbeth. It's new. It's got great actors in it. It's this British version of it with Patrick Stewart as Macbeth. It's fantastic. And we were watching, we were wrapping up Act 4, and I looked at my watch and I realized that we weren't going to make the end of the scene before the bell rang. And I looked at my watch and I realized we were going to be like 2 minutes short. And I did a little pouty stomp my feet dance in my seat. I just kind of, and I just sat there and went, oh, well, just have to deal with it. And as it happened, someone delivered this powerful line, and then someone was dealing with this grief of what had just happened, and in this incredible dramatic pause, the bell rang. And no one moved. And they waited. And they waited till the scene finished. And they waited till the scene finished, and as soon as they exited the stage and the scene ended, everybody grabbed their stuff and ran. Because the scene was that powerful and the kids were that into it. And it was like, okay, this is one of those days where I can go ahead doing this job. Because they were into it. The whole reason I studied English was because I had great teachers when I was in college and when I was in high school. I had a teacher when I was in college who had a PhD in medieval literature. Now, nobody studies medieval literature. English departments have medieval literature people because it's a box they need to check off. No, they like search far and wide to find these guys. And when they do, they're like, hey, let's make you a professor. We got to have one of you on staff. But this guy did all of his classes in the morning. And at 8:30 in the morning, he got standing ovations from his classroom because he would get up in the morning, he would start talking about medieval English, and he would make sure all of his classes were done in Middle English. And he made everybody read Middle English, and he explained it, and he taught it. And then he said, by the way, did you know that the entire preface to the Canterbury Tales is set in the exact same meter as the Macarena? And proceeded to do the general prologue to the Canterbury Tales in Middle English to the tune of La Macarena with the dance. With the dance, which I will by no ways reproduce today. Thank you. And because of that, I took every one of his classes I could take, because that man's passion was so overwhelming that what he had to say, I listened to. I didn't care what he was talking about. I didn't care what he had to say. The guy could turn a lesson on the Knight's Tale into something that I turned into relationships that I had right there, because he had a passion about it. People ask me why I teach English, because there's treasures there, because I love it, because, okay, there's some stuff there that I would rather go, you know, eat off my own toes than talk about. Okay, and I'm not nearly as flexible as I used to be. It's kind of hard getting there. But then there's days where I get to do things that I just adore. And people look at me like, this dude's nuts. But they pay attention. There's days when they can tell, wow, I don't know what in the world he's talking about, but he's really into it. You know, I should pay attention to this. I'm not really sure why, but I should. Because I know this guy, and he's pretty much a straight shooter, and this means a whole lot to him. And I should probably pay attention to that. And there's other things that I'm passionate about too. And we should all be that passionate about Christ. We should be that passionate about Christ so that when we talk about him, people go, okay, this dude's weird, but he's on fire about this, and this is really interesting. I don't quite know what this guy's all about, and this is really odd, but I want to know more about this, because this is really, really interesting. I don't know if this guy's absolutely crazy or just really, really interesting. But whatever he's talking about means a whole heck of a lot to him. And I want to know more about that. And I've said it before. What if they think we're crazy? Well, of course we're crazy. Okay. So what? I'd rather the whole world think I'm crazy than one person go to hell because I kept my mouth shut. We're not dealing with inconsequential matters here. We're dealing with eternal matters here. Life and death. For eternity. We're dealing with where people are going to spend their final days. We're dealing with how people are going to spend their life on this earth, whether they're going to spend it with Christ or whether they're going to spend it without Christ. And all that means, whether they're going to walk through the world in darkness, not having any idea where they're going, not having any idea what they're doing here, fumbling around in darkness, trying to make their own path, trying to figure out how to do it on their own, or whether they're going to have a shepherd leading them and guiding them. We have to be passionate about that. You know what? Let them think we're crazy. Let the atheists and the culture despisers malign us all they want. When the crisis comes in their lives, where will they go? There's this guy I used to know on Facebook. Used to go to high school with him. We made friends on Facebook. Finally, he unfriended me. I called him the angry atheist. He didn't have a problem with that. He kind of embraced it. I always kind of thought to myself, you know, your worldview, has it helped you at all? Has it brought you any peace? All you do is rant and rave about all the things that bother you and all the things that you can't stand and how angry you are at this and how angry you are at that. What has your worldview brought you? But more rage and more discontent. I may complain about things that I'm not happy about, that I'm trying to change, but I have joy and I have peace and I have passion. And let the world call me crazy. I don't care. I know the reward for my passion. And may we all have that passion. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit.